Dreaming about being a big star. They say you're basic, they say you're easy. You're always riding in the backseat. Now I'm smiling from the stage while you were clapping.
Chapter 4. Going over to Mustang's doesn't stop entirely, but now that the, honeymoon's over, there's usually other people there as well. Morose, Ailey, the entire rotating cast of Mustang's aides, but also occasionally the Hugheses, which is actually pretty great. Alicia prompts him to refill the pool while Mustang and Hughes argue over wine, and after dinner, Gracia's mushroom quiche, Ed has a new recipe. She tells him very seriously when they're leaving. Then we get to do handsprings and flips. Her eyes light with the fires of innovation. Flips into the pool. You're a terrible influence, Hughes tells Ed as he hustles her into the car. Think she'll make varsity? Gracia says, following behind. Nationals in 5 years, Ed promises, to which Elle cries, No, I'm gonna be a hockey player. Teams get trophies, honey, Gracia says remindingly as she gets behind the wheel. Individuals get cash prizes. Aren't you still saving up for that pony? No, Elle says sternly, somewhat muffled by her clamoring into the back seat. I'm just going to borrow from Roy. Oh, no. No, you don't want to do that, Hughes says with some alarm. Why would you do that? Why not? You said there's good debt and bad debt, and good debt is how you build reputation. You said people borrow from Roy all the time, Elle says in a mutinously practical voice. Why can't I? Roy, you'd borrow me money, right?
Certainly, Mustang says, wine glass up by his mouth to hide a smile. I only take mortal souls as collateral, however. Be advised.
That's not what I said people owe Roy. That's different, Hughes says exasperatedly.
Gracia with a hand over her mouth to eat the giggles.
And you can't sell your soul till you're 16 anyway. Your signature's not legally binding.
Plus, his interest is just criminal, Ed says, jerking a thumb at Mustang. One second you're joining the army, the next you're reorganizing it.
He's not accredited financial institution, Gracia says firmly, as Hughes and Mace both give Ed some pretty amazed looks. You won't get a good deal. Part of building a good reputation is making the right decisions about where your debt is coming from.
Yeah, listen to your mom, Ed says hastily, while Mustang and Hughes laser, stop telling little children we did treason, into his forehead with their eyes. Nobody's gonna take you seriously if you say this guy's your sugar sponsor.
Okay, see you Monday, Roy.
Hughes slams the car door behind himself as Gracia briefly puts her forehead to the steering wheel, shoulders shaking.
Incredible, Mustang comments as they drive away.
Ed huffs and turns on him, folding his arms. Okay, well, who the fuck owes you? Are you loan sharking on the side now, on top of everything else?
Why so surprised? It was your idea. Mustang toasts him with the wine. Some people become very suggestible when you make their debts disappear.
That wasn't my idea. My idea was to stop pretending everyone else will play by the rules if only you do. You're the one who went straight to mob tactics.
I seem to recall a certain young man describing the military as a whole as nothing more than an overgrown gang with a fetish for matching outfits.
Mustang says, looking enormously amused behind his glass.
Are you walking home?
Ed resists the urge to blow a raspberry in Mustang's face and goes to find his shoes. Yeah, it's too nice to risk death by your driving skills. So it's not that bad. Ed gets to see friends from the dog pound days that he wouldn't really have a reason to see otherwise, especially now that he's sorta dead undercover. And while Ailey's kind of a stick in the mud, Morizet turns out to be one of those amiable Havoc types who are quietly good at everything and happy to pull over and split a side of loaded fries when he picks Ed up on their way to a night of chauffeuring Mustang. Ed even gets to see Shezka. She still works for Hughes, and he and Mustang still use her occasionally when they need something copied out that can't be carried out of its location in anything besides someone's brain. Then there's Hawkeye, which is simultaneously great and extremely weird. Hawkeye isn't weird. She's got the kind of composure that Ed has to assume only grows from literal decades of being exposed to Mustang, like how bacteria develop shields against radioactivity. And it's actually really good to see her more, since they haven't really met up since Hayate had his hip injury. The weirdness is all on Ed's part. What with thinking thoughts like, wearing all these high-collared shirts now feels kind of like copying her. That's gotta be some kind of fucky, right? Luckily, Ed has been much weirder. Is that a trampoline? Hawkeye says, folding her arms on the back of the deck railing. Ed shifts his grip on the boxes so he can remove the popsicle from his mouth and says, two trampolines.
Two trampolines, Hawkeye repeats.
They didn't have the size I wanted.
Ah.
There's a hiss and a pop as she cracks a beer above him.
I hear there's strawberries back here.
Oh, yeah, let me get this set up. I'll grab you some.
Just point,
Hawkeye says, coming down the back stairs. She helps him unbox everything and set up the trampolines, then crouches by the overgrown strawberry sprawl and sips her beer while Ed looks both ways, checks that no neighbors are peeking, and claps.
The trampoline unpluralizes.
Ed clambers up and gives a couple of testing bounces, then sees Hawkeye's gaze going up and down, tracking him, so he sits down cross-legged, hands on his ankles.
Is that even any good?
Hawkeye considers her beer and handful of strawberries, then shrugs in a,
reviving my taste buds from years of military cafeterias would take active necromancy,
way, which is depressingly Mustang-like. Ed jerks his chin at the house, Mustang words. What's your excuse for hanging out?
I'm delivering some documents.
Hawkeye tosses him a strawberry.
I hear you cook now.
Ed pulls a face. Trying. That fucker keeps eating all my fucking food, and I can't get dough to come out right no matter what I do. No matter what kind of dough. Yeast, no yeast, rice flour. I'm fucking cursed. He chomps vengefully on the strawberry.
I can make meatballs okay, though. Come over and I'll feed you some.
He swallows. Though, shit. I'm being followed now. We probably shouldn't meet up for a while. There's an abandoned playground up by the old rail yards on North Side. They've been using it as a makeshift canine obstacle course to run Hayate and Chowder on. Ed discreetly alchemizing some of the rustier bits off, lest they find out whether dogs can get tetanus. Hawkeye looks assessingly at him for a moment.
You still spar?
Ed nods. Up until she left with Al, May was his main opponent. What with Al's joints still not being up for sustained roughhousing. But now that she's in Jing, I'm kind of in between partners right now, so I'm mainly just lifting. And it's off-season for gymnastics, so... Ed bounces on his butt a little, demonstrative. I'm just fucking around in between conditioning. Hawkeye nods, decisive.
You could show me a few things.
She tips her chin at the house. We use the same athletics club. It won't stand out if you start using it, too. There's sparring mats. Are you attached to your gym? Nope, Ed says, trying to play it cool and not sound too excited. I just mainly use the university one. We can go wherever. So he starts gym time with Hawkeye. Ed did vaguely think it might come across weird. The minister, his side piece, and his chief of staff all rolling up to the same gym. But it turns out by athletics club, Hawkeye means a sprawling hangar-like complex that encompasses a shooting range, mile track, skating rink, rooftop handball court, and diving pool. And even if all three of them arrived together in matching outfits, they'd instantly be lost in the swarms of sweaty volleyball moms and amateur rugby leagues. Mustang doesn't even come with them anyway, though Ed does see him once. He doesn't see them, talking to some guy Ed doesn't recognize as they head into the depths of the swim complex. This is frankly the best case scenario, honestly, and lets Ed go to the weights alone with Hawkeye. She does way more cardio to his weight training, but they sync up for core workouts, and he spots her on the bench before they go whack each other around a bit on the mats. There's a lot of stop-start technique stuff, never really making it to an outright fight. Hawkeye's much more concerned with getting a takedown right every time than she is just sparring, which makes sense. This is for her to break a hold or do a one-off physical intervention, because if she's brawling, then plans A through Z have already failed, and all that's left is to grab the pitchforks and storm the castle. Ed's glad for every hour he spent with Lan Fan in the palace yards, because she's as textbook as they come, and in pure technique, hammers straight through his more patchwork style. It really comes in handy to be able to pass on the forms to Hawkeye now. She usually sticks around a bit after they're done, too, sweaty and disheveled, showing him how she tapes her knee and letting him taste her gross but weirdly vivid vegetable drink things. She's clearly decided a long time ago that she wasn't going to try to be impressive or charming or anything other than herself. Kind of the opposite of Mustang that one way. But all that's done is make other people want to try and impress her instead. Ed is not immune. Though probably it's because at least half, because when he was 12 and asked her if she knew how to pee standing up, she didn't immediately hurl him out the nearest window. Honestly, why couldn't his stupid crush fixate on her instead? She's probably not into panty sniffing or donkey roleplay or whatever the fuck Mustang does. Though she definitely knows about it. "How is it so far?" she asks after one session, when they're both lying side by side, flat on their backs, trying to catch their breath. It's not a sentence with a whole lot of inflection, but somehow she manages to convey what she's talking about anyway. Has he walked in on Mustang and Diane in flagrante degradio pouring bleach in each other's buttholes? Well, no. Ed puffs out his cheeks. Could be worse. Hawkeye nods, doesn't say anything else. And that's the end of it. Which is great, because that's about what Ed can handle. These days, it sometimes feels like he's wearing his fucking embarrassment herpes on his face. It's not, like, unmanageable, but the constant undercurrent is always there, always putting an edge to everything. Plus, there's the fact that Hawkeye's asking about it. When previously she had very kindly decided there was no point sticking her hand in this termite mound. And then Mustang actually walks up on them. Though Ed's demonstrating a leg lock and doesn't notice until he and Hawkeye finally overbalance and hit the mats. Mustang's not just surprised to see them here. He's got a weird look on his face again. Almost like he thought he was opening the door to the old man sauna or something and unexpectedly found them instead. Hawkeye just raises her eyebrows at him, very slowly, from where her head is sandwiched between Ed's legs. "Right," Mustang says promptly, about facing, the weird look not abating even as it swivels out of view. "I'll just meet you out front, shall I?" Ed's not touching whatever that was with a 10-foot pole. He's not super clear on what Hawkeye's actual deal with Mustang is, apart from all the parts where it's super fucking clear.
It's extremely obvious Mustang thinks she's the neatest thing since hair gel. And these days, Hawkeye's not even trying to disguise the fact that she's the Doberman haunting the dubiously legal junkyard of his life. Ed's pretty sure that if they were gonna get together in the traditional way, they'd have done it already, though. And there's definitely some hard reasons why they haven't, which range from the depressing to the gross, and which Ed shouldn't think about anyway. It's not his business, and there's no point. Even if he and Hawkeye are, if you stand on your head and squint, kind of sitting in the same leaky boat. Her feelings aren't embarrassing, though. Just scary. It's another reason Ed doesn't want to think about it. It feels kind of fucked up to be grateful. Because that's what lives on the other side of pity. And he doesn't pity her. Wouldn't insult her like that. And it's not like he thinks he's sitting in the drier part of the boat. He just can't deny that he doesn't also have an anchor around his neck. He can swim. But it's fine if he doesn't think about it. Fun if he doesn't think about it. He doesn't want to not be having fun. He's dating Mustang, only it's not real. If it's not real, then nothing he does matters. He can be as giddy and dumb as he wants on Mustang's arm, and Mustang will even think it's all part of the act. Ed can enjoy it. He wants to enjoy it. Like how he is with Winry. He should be able to just take this for what it is. A big hand touching him, a nice voice talking in his ear. But he can't. There's something in him that just can't reconcile. Still fucking stuck in that psychic step missed down the stairs. That broken calculation. That looping disbelief that Mustang would actually motherfucking do this. Because his life is a joke, this does not actually prevent him from being turned on by it. Tennis? Ed demands. They're in a study, paging through Mustang's appointment book. The more stuff they go out to, the more Ed realizes that time spent at home, allegedly holing up with his love bunny, is actually pretty damn rare for Mustang, and probably counts as some kind of vacation. This thing stuffed with enough cards and invitations and penciled entries, by now Ed can recognize Morose's handwriting, that it's a miracle Mustang has time to wipe himself when he shits.
I have to keep my hand in. Mustang sounds more resigned than anything. Though I suppose it hardly matters whether you're any good.
Why tennis?
Because any deal that makes it to the parliament floor is one that has already long been agreed to in someone's poker room or croquet course or back garden, and I refuse to get anywhere near a polo helmet. If I want to get anything done, I need to spend my Sunday mornings letting the Deputy Minister of Justice pitch his balls at my head. Mustang says unexcitedly. On alternate Saturdays, it's doubles with the Secretary to the Treasurer and Central's Magistrate, which is why we're going to the private courts at the Athletics Club.
Oh, God, Ed says, no longer paying attention due to a sudden and urgent missive deployed by the absolute least helpful parts of his imagination. You have a little outfit, don't you?
Yes. Yes, there's a dress code. You won't be expected to adhere, Mustang says wearily, already on his next stack of reports.
Little socks, Ed says, completely glazed over. Little white socks. Probably even little shorts. He can't think about the shorts. He'll die. Is his mouth open? He needs to get a hold of himself. Wait, are you going to make me play?
Mustang rolls his eyes. If you can stand the indignity.
Ed's not going to be able to stand at all, he realizes, watching Mustang pull rackets out of a bag on the benches by the courts. There's little white shorts, all right. Socks to the knee. Critical bits of Ed are shutting down, while other highly uncritical parts are scuttling around, shrieking and leaving scratch marks on the walls.
I'll assume you know which end is for holding,
Mustang says, handing him a racket, inviting him to joke. But all Ed can manage is a sort of, mm-hmm.
Mustang gives him a slightly weird look along with the racket, so Ed forces himself to get a motherfucking grip. Tone it down! He claws at the high neck of his own transmuted shirt, as if that's what's bothering him. He didn't buy any sportswear with Brinley and Landy, so now he looks cheap next to Mustang, as well as crazy. And grips the racket like the last tow rope out of hell. If he looks directly at Mustang right now, he might hit him with it. Luckily for everyone, however, that's when company arrives.
Roy!
It's a big, rangy guy with heavy laugh lines and hair the same color as Al's. His own tennis whites, much looser on his frame.
Finally back on the court, eh? How's the knee?
Then he looks at Ed and his whole face brightens.
Hey, I know you.
His eyes drop to Ed's automail, currently exposed calf to ankle. But he's good enough that his flicker of surprise is almost invisible.
You're the little gentleman who was doing all the special filing in the archives last summer. You were working for the general here, right?
Yeah. Ed's smile possibly comes out a little bit less like special filing was exactly what he was doing, and a bit more like he's about to attack the nearest white jersey knee sock with his teeth. But the guy doesn't rear back, so it's a win.
Gosh, I didn't expect anyone to remember me.
Of course I do. The man grins, gesturing at his own head.
New hairstyle every day. How could I forget? You looked great.
Right, that had been during Al and May's finals month. Ed beams like someone who gives a damn about being memorable to random officers, grateful for anything that isn't feeling his own synapses die over socks.
Aw, that's nice of you. I got all this. I better do something with it, right?
Worth every effort, the guy promises. You work for the CEC, no?
Oh, yeah, but I'm still in university, Ed says brightly, clawing some hair behind his ear in a way that conveniently blocks his sight of Mustang.
So it's only part-time right now. I'm just helping out when I can.
Of course. Soffler mentioned you were interested in alchemy. Is that what you're studying?
Oh, nah, Ed says, probably a little too earnest.
I mean, alchemy's cool and all, but I got accepted to the literature school. My major's poetry.
He's been invaluable, Mustang says, in the warm, indulgent tones used to discuss what kind of Diamante collar to put on your Pomeranian.
Saved me weeks of work. He's quite the little gift, you know. For the administrative, anyway. I'm hoping we'll be able to keep hold of him once he graduates.
Never mind. Ed's gonna hit Mustang with the racket anyway.
Just one, no, two. Two semesters to go, he says, to make it absolutely clear there's nothing but gentle xylophone music playing behind his eyes.
I see. No wonder you snapped him up.
The guy winks at Ed, pretending the remark is aimed at him.
How could I not? Mustang says fondly. What am I saying? Roger, Ed. Ed, this is Roger. We've worked together on a few things for the council. He and his wife are the ones who got me into tennis, actually. Is Aline here?
Memory flicks up a card. Roger Corbel. It was his spectrum analysis paper Ed read in Mustang's stack of spying, among other things. But Mustang's gesture stretches his shirt sleeves up his bicep, and Ed's mostly preoccupied with whether the sight of an extremely pale inner arm can cause aneurysms. This is the second largest cheese in the Justice Ministry, assuring Mustang his wife's here and dandy, and Ed's 2 seconds away from dribbling. Incredible! Maybe he should try hitting himself with the racket first.
You open for doubles?
Corbel asks Ed, bouncing the edge of his own racket against his leg.
Aline will be out in a minute. We could do 2-on-2.
Sure,
Ed says, trying and failing to look away from the slight prominence of the vein running through Mustang's inner elbow.
He was just showing me how balls work.
Corbel laughs and Mustang chuckles, delighted to patronize. Your first time? Corbel says, just innocently enough. Ed, finding his retaliatory options limited, opts to further devolve down the mental capacity tree and just accepts that at some point he's going to start barking like a feral raccoon. Yeah, is it really obvious? Don't worry, no one expects a pro right out of the gate, Corbel says, his day clearly made. And it's all for fun anyway. We really must have a proper dinner sometime soon. Ah, there you are, Aline. Look who Roy brought. Roy, the woman who just came out of the changing block in a swishy sports dress, is taller than even Corbel. Box braid swept up in an ice cream bun, adding another 6 inches of height. Oh my goodness. She swoops in and grabs Ed's face with both hands. You're like a little bread fairy. Ed feels his eyelid twitch. Dribbling or not, shit like this never happens when he's dressed like an undertaker with an anger management problem. Gosh, what kind of bread? One of those big fluffy loaves with the crackle crust, she says immediately. Mustang's very clearly trying not to crack up behind her. Sprinkled with nuts. What an absolute sugar bun, Roy. Where have you been hiding him? This fresh swoop over to Mustang at least gets her hands off him, which is good considering Ed certainly feels some nuttiness coming on. He gives another go at pulling himself together. He's Ed fucking Elric. He can build and execute original arrays while his own chopped off limb goes zooming past him. He can fucking focus for 10 seconds, but it's hard. Ed forces himself to redirect, feeling like he's physically lifting up his brain like a cat that won't stop frantically licking cream off the counter. But if he's going to stare at some fuck-damn socks, they're at least not going to be Mustangs. Corbel. All right. He's not just some random guy. He plays tennis with Mustang. He seems to know an awful lot about Ed already, too. So either Mustang's been blithering about his new boy toy to anyone in reach, or Corbel's kept his own tabs and isn't shy about letting Mustang know it. Then again, Mustang's all but said he's allying with this guy, or at least trying to. Well, Ed's done his job, which is make sure they can really hear the wind whistling between his ears. They split into pairs, him and Mustang against the Corbels. Just to start, Mrs. Corbel says, with the cheer of someone about to absolutely smear the opposition to the pavement, and begin to play. It's not often Ed feels like he's missing a dick, but the little tennis outfits sure make him feel like he needs to fuck a hole through something. He has no goddamn clue if Mustang is any good or not, can barely keep his eyes on their opponents, is completely unaware of what he's doing himself besides flailing the racket whenever the ball gets too close. He can hear Mustang's breathing. Maybe if Ed positions himself directly ahead of the ball, forehead first, it'll just knock him out. At one point, the ball comes way over the line on his end, and Ed has to jog all the way down past all the other people playing to retrieve it. Thank you, Mustang says when he comes back, grinning at Ed, and briefly leans in, under the guise of gripping Ed's nape in a friendly shake. You should probably start calling me Roy. And Ed has to just stand there and say, uh-huh, and not think about that hand pushing him all the way down over the locker room counter. Not think about anything. Tell himself he's too old to go masturbate hysterically in broom closets. Mustang's into weird stuff, he reminds himself crazedly. Those bestiality rumors probably do have some grounding in reality. He pays to get stuff done. He's probably into really messed up shit like that thing in Golden Dawn that made Ed want to rinse his brain in ammonia. Like, having sex with Mustang would probably be 10 minutes of apathetic thrusting or the kind of depraved proposition Ed would have to run away from. He'd probably actually want to fuck his automail port or something. It wouldn't be good. There's no reward here.
The fancy cologne is a lie! His body primly informs him that it doesn't care and intends to do business as usual. How do people with dicks do this? He'd have to glue his goddamn cock to his thigh just to get through the day. This is unsustainable. This is dehydrating. If this keeps up, he's going to have to wring out his goddamn briefs like a dish sponge every evening. This can't be normal. Is this normal? Is he supposed to be reacting like this to a man that smells like a sexy plant? Why does he even like Mustang anyway? Is this like daddy issues? Hohenheim disappeared and Mustang couldn't fuck off if he wanted to? Is that it? It's gotta be, right? Ed can't really just be this into a guy with a bowl cut, right? He needs an expert opinion. He calls Winry. I've got daddy issues, right? He demands when the line connects. Like, a lot of them. Like, a lot, right? Enough that they, like, bleed over into a bunch of other stuff. Well, this isn't how I imagined this conversation would start, Winry says. But let's go. So there's a guy? I can't be into this. I can't be. You have been a sad, weird nerd literally the entire time I've known you, which is from birth, Winry informs him. There is no limit to what nonsense you're into. I'm not a... Ugh. What the fuck do I even do about this? You could always try telling him about your feelings, Winry says cheerfully. Sit him down, take his hands in yours. What feelings? The ones you're having all over our phone call? It's not about feelings. You know the last time I got hot thinking about giving someone a handy? Never! Sounds to me like that's strong evidence for feelings, Wynn says observingly. It's just the tennis outfit, Ed hisses, ignoring her. It's just the outfit. It has to be. There's a tennis outfit? He's got a little tennis outfit. What the fuck am I supposed to do about that, huh? Huh? I'm just horny. You're always horny, Wynn dismisses. It's what you get for not using your teen years properly. And you wouldn't be calling me if you just wanted to bang him. You'd have already ridden him thrice and then called me to complain about how he's mooning around outside your window, making depressed cow noises. Like it isn't your own fault. Who even is this guy? Ed tells her. This turns out to be a mistake. Because Winry starts laughing so hard, Ed hears the phone clatter out of her hand. This isn't funny, Ed hisses as she gropes around for the line. This is hysterical, Wynn wheezes. You finally find a guy you can't treat like a cheap chew toy. Oh my god, you were so wound up about him as a kid. This explains everything. Have you told Al? Oh my god, of course you haven't. There's nothing to tell, Ed says wildly. This is gonna be over in like 3 weeks. I don't know, whenever. You are my doctor. I'm just asking if there's something wrong with me, medically. Oh, there is plenty wrong with you, Wynn gasps, still snickering. But wanting to fuck your ex-boss isn't one of them. He was never my boss. Yeah, right. He was the only one in the military with enough dirt on you to have any leverage at all. In the real military, I mean. No wonder you want him. Ed makes a dying sound. Winry, can't you just fucking tell me this is gonna ruin my life or something? Winry snorts. Ed, my girlfriend is a kleptomaniac with artillery knees, and my last real ex is you. You're asking me about sane romance choices? She makes a judgmental little tisk noise. You should probably improve your relationships with men anyway. What? What men? Oh, come on. You treat every man you meet like a cum rag, and you beat the shit out of the ones that piss you off. That's just not healthy. Ed goggles at the phone. And you want me to fix this by dating Mustang? Why not? Might as well start with the hardest one. After that, everything will be easy. So just fuck him and get him out of your system. I can't fuck him, Ed snaps, instead of saying what he really means, which is that if he fucks Mustang, it is definitely, definitely going to make it worse. Not to mention, probably involve getting jumper cables clamped to his nipples. It's not gonna work. What do you mean it's not gonna work? I mean, he knows already. He knows, okay? Like, for fuck's sake, you weren't even surprised about it. He knows. The one thing you can't call me is subtle, all right? Oh, ouch, Wynn says sympathetically. Did you get rejected? No, he asked me to fake date him. There's some prodigious silence on Winry's end. Are you sure he doesn't want to fuck you? If he did, don't you fucking think we would have already? Point, Wynn has to agree. Though he does have a kind of a busy job, and you're pretty hard to get a hold of. Maybe he just hasn't found the time? I'm a busy person, and I find plenty of... Ed cuts himself off before he accidentally tells Wynn how many cumulative hours he's had at Mustang's place recently. Look, I'm serious. It suddenly feels like I'm popping a boner every 40 seconds. Do I need to adjust my hormones or something? Winry makes a pfft noise. Nah. Nah? Okay, look. Remember when we were like 17 and I was complaining to you about how I forgot my toy on the trip to Manye? And how I got so randy I used my hairbrush handle? And you said, well, why the hell would you do that? And I said, not everybody can just transmute their own dildos whenever, Mr. Alchemist. And you said, why would anyone do that? You never even thought about doing that? And then, yes, okay, fine. You and Al went to Jing for the first time, and you called me and you were like, never mind, I get it now. And you told me about how you transmuted the, I get it, 2,000-year-old glass vase into a, I transmuted it back. So it's just what I've been saying. You're normal. You're just behind. While everyone else was out discovering that if you get horny enough, you'll legitimately attempt to have sex with a shampoo bottle, you were fighting serial killers and doing weird alchemy shit in the woods. Plus, you had two puberties. If you really feel like there's something wrong, go see Granny. But you getting wet because you're around a guy you are actually into for once is how things are supposed to work. Ed sulks. I didn't get like that around you or Ling. Me and Ling were having sex with you. If you're not letting off steam, of course you'll feel more pent up. That's true. Yeah, he's not fucking anybody right now. Of course his body's reacting to the sudden dry spell. Yeah, that makes sense. Look, Wynn says, come on up for a weekend and I'll fuck it out of you. And if that doesn't work, we'll figure out what to do about it, okay? Sure, okay. Ed scrubs his face. Why does that make it suddenly feel simultaneously duller and sharper? A problem at once more trivial and more real. I can't this week, though. We're underground in cable until the 17th. And then I'm at that clinic in Saudbizan until August. Well, you'll just have to meet me there, or come up after. Wynn sighs the sigh of the perpetually overbooked. Ah, well, are you sure you've got no chance with the general? He's always seemed fairly, you know. Mercenary? Ed supplies sourly. Whorish? Amiable is what I was going to say, you lout, Wynn says without heat. He didn't exactly seem the type to turn down an offer. Are you sure? Positive. He's married to Amstress and has... Remember Diane? Yeah. She's exactly what she looks like and gives Mustang exactly what he's looking for, to the tune of, like, both our monthly rents combined, probably. Wow, Wynn says, sounding vaguely impressed. Well, I guess we shouldn't be surprised. That's probably about standard for a guy like him, rich in a general and all. Yeah, Ed leans his forehead against the wall. They're making a movie about him. Did you hear? The tagline is Burning Passions, Wynn says dryly, with some cacti on fire in the background. I think small Arctic bivalves frozen to their ice floes in uninhabited Hatterland have heard. Yeah, well, guess who else is in it? Wynn briefly sounds like she's frowning. Captain Hawkeye? Me! They're putting me in this stupid movie. Only not me. Fake me, that's fake dicking Mustang. And he got invited to the premiere, which means I have to go and see a movie where Aveen goddamn Ian swans around pretending to be Mustang while fucking fake bimbo me runs around and probably breaks his fucking ankle. I'm being played by some guy named Ricardo. Wynn makes a noise Ed last heard when Chowder was trying to retch up a piece of corn cob. You what? I know, it's Ricardo? Ricardo Khan? What? Yeah, what is he? You're going to be played by Ricky Khan and you are complaining about your life? You're going to go to that premiere. You're going to get me his autograph. Wynn? So Winry turns out to be a treacherous traitor, which Ed should have really expected given her propensity towards reconnecting his automail on 1 when she says she's going to do it on 3. But it's fine, because Ed got what he wanted, which is a medical second opinion, and it turns out all he has to do is go fuck somebody until he stops being nuts. Realizing it's been more than 2 months since he last got laid does make him feel more nuts, however, on top of being embarrassing. The further realization that between picking up more work to stop thinking about Mustang and continuing to actually go out with Mustang, Ed's schedule is not exactly rife with opportunities to hook up, does not help matters. This isn't soon going to change, either, because between the Corbels deciding he's the cutest little moron to ever fall headfirst out of a crib, and Mustang ramping up the frequency of the stuff he takes Ed to, all that's left is, like, Monday nights when everything is fucking closed anyway. Mustang wasn't kidding about Ed's schedule being a factor in this fake dating scheme, it turns out. If Ed was working a regular day job, these past 2 weeks especially, he'd hardly have any time to himself at all. And then it occurs to him that anybody he did fuck would have to be real fucking discreet, because he's currently the war minister's boyfriend. And while that isn't no front page news, Ed is pretty fucking sure that statement is missing and alarmingly inevitable yet. This makes his options a lot more limited than just going to some bars and taking home the first guy that acts right enough, which was already getting annoying even before everything. God, if somebody told Ed last year that dating Mustang would make him celibate, he'd have laughed himself sick. So he goes around stewing in that for a while. Silently, since he's not about to tell Mustang, because it's not like he wants to repeat the lemming on meth conversation, and at worst Mustang will just assume this is somehow Ed's way of asking for approval, and breezily tell him to go and make sure he gets all the relevant details so they can spin this too into some cheating rumor scandal rigmarole. Ed's not about to rope anybody else into this mess, so until he can meet up with Winry for plausible automail maintenance or whatever, it's just him and his stupid hand taking him to fucking gyms all night thrust and slide all you can take crab crank in between shuttling around town at Mustang's elbow. And then Mustang will be doing his week in his daybook and say something like, "Feel free to have the house on Friday evening if you like. I'll be out." Out has meant with Ed for the past month, so Ed lowers his book. He's taken to colonizing the window seats to read, because the armchair has too clear of a view of Mustang's desk, and the rabid raccoon in Ed's pants hasn't actually moved on to more productive pastures. Where are you gonna be?
I have a dentist appointment.
A dentist appointment. Right. It's occasionally weird to realize he's on the inside of Mustang's con of a life, to be subjected to the fact that despite all the elaborate gilding, he's still subject to things like bedhead and blisters and dentistry. It has Ed frowning and running his tongue experimentally over his own teeth. Should I go to the dentist?
When he glances up again, Mustang is staring at him with something like horror unfolding in his eyes.
Yes, he says unequivocally. Yes, you should. Never mind, you're coming with me.
And Ed is kind of curious. So later that week, he gets led into a pink and white little office off 12th and Hawthorne, where friendly ladies in nurse uniforms lead Mustang to one room and Ed to another, and then proceed to torture him. That was the worst thing that ever happened to me, Ed swears 40 minutes later. His mouth feels ghastly. He's afraid to lower his hands from his cheeks, lest one of these white-frocked ghouls lunge at him and jam something in. Then, because the receptionists are hiding smiles and Mustang needs a reckoning, he adds, "This is not what I thought when you said you'd do stuff to my mouth." Someone in the hall makes a high-pitched choking noise. A receptionist wheezes into her hands.
"Dear me,"
Mustang says, completely insensate to the level of violation Ed was just victim to.
It seems someone hasn't been reading the fine print.
Both receptionists and a nurse in the hall nearly aspirate.
"You are very fortunate," says the bemasked witch that had been trying to pry Ed's molars out,
stripping off her gloves as she strides behind the counter as well. Ed's no stranger to evil doctor women doing horrible, painful shit to him, but not to his mouth. "You have good teeth. Not everyone's lucky with those genes." "Don't even look at me," Ed tells her bitterly. "You're a bad person. You probably don't even have a medical license."
"There, there," Mustang says disinterestedly, patting Ed twice just below the neck. "Be good and I'll buy you a lolly to feel better."
"I am never going anywhere you take me, ever again."
"Two lollies, even. We can celebrate your teeth not rotting from your head."
"They already weren't doing that. She just said."
"I thought she didn't have a medical license," Mustang says unconcernedly.
So Ed explains what an evil fucking bastard he is all the way to the car.
"Shush," Mustang finally says, doing up his own seatbelt. "They barely did anything to you."
"Barely anything? There were metal picks and scrapers."
"All you got was a routine checkup and cleaning. I would know, seeing as I paid."
"They stuck metal in my mouth." Mustang gives him an unimpressed look, then hooks a finger in his own mouth and pulls his cheek to the side, tilting his head back. There's a glint of silver in there. Ed's so surprised he forgets all about his rant.
"Be grateful," Mustang says, letting it go. "If you don't take care of your teeth, the metal doesn't get taken back out again."
"No, wait, let me see," Ed protests automatically, craning to look. "What is that?"
"Steel fillings. They're implanted in your teeth if you get cavities."
Mustang doesn't look particularly enthusiastic about it, but he does hold his mouth open again so Ed can see. "Automail for your teeth?" Ed's seen people with gold teeth before, but that's the whole tooth, not the kind of patchwork thing Mustang has going on. "I didn't know you had metal in you, too."
"Huh, not nearly as much." Mustang starts the car. "And it doesn't do the things automail does. It's just lumps of metal."
Ed realizes he's got one hand braced on the gear shift, knuckles bumping Mustang's thigh, and pulls back. Mustang doesn't notice, checking his hair in the rearview mirror the way he always does whenever he has to use it for its intended purpose. But then again, he wouldn't. He doesn't think anything of touching Ed, especially not anymore. The hands on his back, or shoulder, or neck. As time went on, Ed kept not biting his hand off. They've gotten less measured, more familiar. That squeeze and shake on the tennis courts, more real. Ed honestly can't blame anyone but himself. At first, he might have thought Mustang was tossing bones at Ed's pathetic teenage crush. But Mustang doesn't do pity. It's not his style to taunt like this, either. Dangling what Ed can't have, rubbing his nose in. After all, Winry was right. Why not just fuck Ed and be done with it? There's no advantage to being a fucking dick about it. That way you don't get a blowjob.
Surely this can't be one of Mustang's weird fucking kinks. So it's not that. It's just Mustang. Mustang who likes Ed. They're friends. At this point, there really isn't another word for it. He laughs at Ed's jokes, even when he doesn't want to. He doesn't care that Ed's into him. Isn't moved by the thought of Ed wanting to touch him, fuck him, whatever. Like Winry, kind of. It's just Ed who can't get there himself. Well, he will. He's probably just got to get through this. And keep reminding himself about Mustang's kinks, probably. Keep himself on track. And hey, at least fucking around with Mustang pretty much guarantees that something is going to blow up soon and take up all their attention.